This sound was recorded on the 12th of July, 1966, medium Leslie Flynn.
Nice to see you.
Yes, it's lovely to hear you.
You come and pound in the lot?
No, only when I come to see you.
Oh, really? That's a compliment, isn't it? Oh, you don't come up to do shopping, are you?
Oh, no, Mickey, no.
Well, I suppose you've got good shops down where you live, haven't you?
Yes, we have, really.
I don't suppose you do all that much shopping, really, do you?
Well, there does seem to be quite a lot, you know. I was only thinking what a good thing it would be when we haven't got to eat on the other side. Save a lot of work, won't it?
Do you do a lot of cooking, then?
No, I don't cook much, but I have to get the food, haven't I?
Yeah, well, I know. I was thinking, I mean, a lot of people who live on their own, they eat out a lot, don't they?
Oh, yes.
Well, they sort of get tin stuff and make things, you know.
Yes.
Times have changed, don't they?
Yes.
Do you like fish and chips?
I dare say I did in my youth. I'm not picking on them now. I'm a vegetarian.
Are you?
Yes, I have been for 30 years.
Oh, gosh, but can't you eat fish if you're a vegetarian then?
Hardly.
Oh. Oh, dear. You don't like a nice piece of plate or something? Oh, well, hold on.
Thank you.
What is he talking about?
Hello, darling.
Hello.
Hello.
Talking about eating fish. You ought to know by now that you're a vegetarian.
I don't think I've told him before.
Oh, it probably never struck him that you were. You know. It's extraordinary how much he does know, really.
Yes.
Well, how are you?
Very well, thank you, dear.
Good. Had you something very special in mind you wanted
Yes,
to talk
you
about?
Promised to tell me about your early incarnation in Egypt.
Oh, yes, of course I did.
The earliest you can remember, I think you said, you would talk about. When do you learn about these incarnations?
Well, it comes very gradually. And there again, it rather depends on the individual as to how anxious they are to assimilate knowledge and experience and how much they desire to know regarding themselves and the past. You see, obviously, the first impressions and so on of coming over here, one is so full of the new excitement and the new life and making friends and meeting old acquaintances and relations and so on, that one doesn't seriously think too much about oneself in the sense of one's past lives, even assuming that you know anything about the possibility of past lives. The vast majority of people are only concerned with the life they've just lived. And very few people have any realization that there is such a thing as incarnation or reincarnation, and therefore the vast majority of people take a very long time before they begin to delve and begin to understand even the possibilities of the present and the past. In fact, the vast majority of people are quite happy, quite contented to, I suppose you say, to be static.
Yes.
But it's not until you begin to understand more fully this life that you begin to realize that the past is important and that one has had, invariably, many existences, and it's when you begin to meet people over here that claim acquaintanceship with you and remember past experiences of their own and start telling you about yourself and about how you had known this or that person and this or that experience had happened to you and in fact how your lives have been entwined. I realize now, of course, something that I never understood, and that is that we are all part of a group soul.
Oh.
Although we are individuals and we retain our individuality and personality, it is something which has evolved through, you might say, centuries of experience. We don't suddenly become. We've only become through trial and error, through experience and so on, and we only begin to assimilate this and realize its full potency and what it really is and what it really has achieved. are able to see in retrospect ourselves. You see, I think it is that the vast majority of us assume that from birth to the grave is our life, whereas actually, of course, it's only one of a whole series of lives.
Yes.
In which we've had different bodies under different conditions, different periods of time, in which we've had opportunity to experience many things, which have all helped to build up the real individual personality and character. We are all a product, of course, of experiences, not only of ourselves, of course, but also of others, because we can never live to ourselves. And it is when one realizes this that we are not a self-contained unit. We like to think that we are on Earth, but we're not really. We're the product, really, of all sorts of minds and all sorts of influences, all sorts of experiences. And it would be impossible to assimilate everything in one body, in one life. And therefore, we have had many, many lives in which we've been male and female, in which perhaps we've only been a child, died at an early age. In fact, it's so important to realize that it's only when you've had innumerable experiences that you can really begin to see yourself as a fully fledged, if you put it like that, individual.
Yes. That's very, very interesting, yeah.
But the point is that my earliest recollection, and that only came to me very gradually, because I suppose it was so far removed and so distant in time itself, and as far as I know, I don't really know if it was my very first incarnation, but certainly must have been a very early one, was in the very, very early Egyptian period of time, in a very early dynasty, in which I was a priest.
Oh yes, I can well imagine that.
You see, I want to try to put this in proper perspective, because it's very important, that evidently, ever since, I'd say from the very beginning, but certainly as far as one can recollect or recapture memory at all, I've always been a seeker, always been one who was anxious to know, to discover, the reality of life. I always wanted to find out the secrets of life. I always wanted to find out what really, as it were, made one tick, if I can put it like that. You know, I can see now that I was always attracted to religion.
Yes.
I was always linked up, more or less, with religion in some shape or form. That doesn't necessarily mean to say, by the way, that I was necessarily a religious person, because there's a vast difference in between being a religious person in the full sense of the term than being religiously interested or even inclined.
Yes.
This may sound paradoxical, but it's true.
Were you a priest under Amun Re?
I was a priest in the temples of Karnak.
Oh, Karnak. How interesting.
And I suppose it was that I was initiated in my very early youth. This is what I've been told. This is not what I can remember from experience. Certainly, and repeated as such. Because so far I haven't got a clear picture of this, but this is what I've been told. And that I was a priest in the Temple of Karnak. And this goes back, must be 3,000 to 4,000 years before Christ. And I was actually, I don't know if you understand this, but I'm just trying to put it as best I can, that I was the illegitimate son of one of the pharaohs.
Oh, yes.
You know, actually, of course, the pharaohs had many concubines. It was, I suppose, something which then was very acceptable. But anyway, I was one of many children, and I was put to the temple when I was very young, round about 10 or 12, and that I was a singer. I had a voice, a childish voice, but a good voice, evidently, and I was taught the melodic harmonies and music, and I became eventually a server, that is, someone who serves at the altar. And I was one of many children, presumably in processions, and who contributed towards the ceremonies associated with the temples. And as I got older, I was initiated and taken into the priesthood, and I eventually became a priest. And in this incarnation, I lived to be very old, and I also had great power, because having been in the priesthood for so long, and the priesthood and the royal house were very closely linked. I don't think people fully understand
of course. True. Which barrow was it, dear? Perhaps you don't remember.
No, I do remember. At least I don't remember. I didn't know that town. Potomole.
Oh, yes. That was rather a wonderful rain, wasn't it?
Yes, but that was a interesting rain, and it was one when there were many wars.
Oh, well, and, when were there not wars?
Yes, but there were periods when there was comparative peace, but this was a very warlike period, and there were many, many wars, major and minor ones, border ones, and all sorts of things. And part of my work was to visit armies. I'm talking about my middle age. Visit armies, taking the replica of the guards and taking a retinue of servants and priests and whole retinue of people who were connected with the rituals and the ceremonies. Because although it's not probably understood or generally known, the priesthood was a very powerful, much more powerful than people perhaps are given to understand, and it was really necessary for certain sections of the priesthood to be attached to the what you would call the armies. They were not necessarily fighting forces by any means, but they were there to give strength, spiritual so-called strength, to the soldiers, especially those who were given charge of vast numbers of men. And I visited many places. I went to Syria, Assyria, and many other places of which time is completely, obliterated.
Yes.
There were many races.
Yes. Oh,
many
I see,
interwoven
yes.
races. And there were many varying sections of Egyptian races too. Actually, the Egyptian race, from what I can gather, in its very early infancy, that is, was a nomadic race. But I'm going back long before my experiences of this and what I've been told.
Yes.
But evidently, from what I can gather, I've always been associated, more or less, either. Now this sounds very strange, I can't help it, it happens to be what I'm told and I accept. And I know from later experiences, which I can now remember and recapture, that I was either very much with religion, very much opposed to religion. Now you can't reconcile me with opposition, but the point is that there was always an interest in religion, either very much for or very much against.
Yes, thank you.
In other words, I suppose it is that ever since time immemorial, since I was an individual at all, I was always curious to know more about the religion and what lay behind it, and life after death, and communication. In fact, in the early Egyptian time of which I speak, communication was a very important part of their ceremony.
Oh, it was.
But not a public ceremony. I'm talking now about a private and a very personal one.
You had a seance, more or less.
A kind of seances, yes, and which children were used, strangely enough, boys, young boys, were used as mediums.
Oh, really?
Whether it is because of their purity of mind and lack of experience in the outer world, and also because you do find, as a matter of fact, that a lot of phenomena takes place around children.
Yes, yes.
Poltergeist phenomena and so on.
Yes.
Because children, especially at a certain age, give off a certain something which is very conducive to physical phenomena. and it was a common thing for young boys to be used as instruments.
Yes.
And I had every so experience in that direction. But of course, in ancient Rome, which I had another experience at a later time, I was very much the opposite. In fact, I was very much against religion.
Yes.
This is, of course, the constant war, if you like, or the constant fight within oneself, yes, seeking. And, of course, you can never assimilate knowledge if you're always on one side of the fence.
Yeah, quite true.
The extraordinary thing is that you've got to experience so many things in so many different ways. You've got to all the time be not exactly at war with yourself and at war with life generally, but you've always got to be seeking and searching, sometimes putting up opposition, because sometimes opposition draws from that, opposition draws to one some new aspect of knowledge. That's why I think it's so stupid of people to accept blindly something which they don't necessarily have any evidence or proof of, and they accept it literally without attempting to dissect it or analyze it or to criticize it or to open their mind to new thought or new ideas, because truth is always changing. I don't mean to say that it isn't still truth, but the point is that there's always new aspects of truth, there's always something new to learn, to gain, some new experience to discover, and so on, you see.
Yes. Well, obviously, darling, if you were a priest, I was not with you in that particular
incarnation. In that incarnation, you were not with me, of course.
No.
Because the priests did not marry. They didn't alter the fact, of course, that they did have illegal, I suppose you'd put it, affairs. I mean, the point is that there again, one can also go back to other experiences of mine in which I was very much the opposite to religious. But that, and yet in a weird, strange sort of way, although in this Roman incarnation period of which I speak in the time of Nero and the early Christians, I was not against the Christians, but I was not a believer in Christianity. And I certainly resented, to some extent, the infiltration of this thought into Roman affairs, and particularly into politics, because it did begin to influence in politics. Strangers may seem now talking about it, but there were a vast number of people in high places who did accept Christianity, although they didn't necessarily come out into the open about it at that period.
Yes, yes.
And I lost one or two very dear friends at that time through Christian teachings, because they changed their way of life and their thought and so on, and well, it made a rift. But I was a very martial person in that period of time. In fact, I was a high-standing person in the armies of Rome.
Yes.
Have you heard of no, you wouldn't. You couldn't have. But the time of which I speak in Rome, I was very, after I had retired, that is, I was too old for soldiering, that sort of thing, I had a very beautiful villa built, which was our home, and at that time you were my wife.
Yeah.
First time, as far as I know, that we've ever been together and ever known each other. And we had five children.
Who? Where are they now?
Well, again, you say, where are the five children? Because you say, one assumes and one thinks purely on a basis of relationship. You see, this business of relationship is something I think that we must clarify. I mean, we talk about a life in which we were married, in which we had children, and the close ties of family. But we must remember that over 2,000 years, practically, of time, there have been many changes within ourselves. And the link that was so strong in a family sense or material sense have changed. But it doesn't mean to say that there are not still the links and the affections and love, because love increases, but with the increasing of love and the increasing of affection comes a newer knowledge and a newer realization that we are all so much part of each other that the physical relationships or the physical aspect of relationships no longer have the same meaning. Husband and wife, son, daughter, and so on. They're not in the same sense after long periods of time here with the same meaning. They are important, but it's a greater wisdom and a greater realization that has nothing to do with the physical relationship of male or female or son and daughter or husband and wife. It is a wider vision of mind and of spirit which links us together.
Yes. Oh, that's tremendously interesting, dear.
You see, you get so many people. For instance, I've known people who said, oh, I had three husbands. When I come to your side, which one should I be with? Well, it's quite possible that the person concerned wouldn't be with either of them, any of them, or may well be with one of them, or may well be that they would live in a communal sense. But you must divorce oneself from the physical aspect of relationships and put everything on a mental and a spiritual plan, and then you realize that the qualities of the varying individuals are the important factors. It's not the whether you love this husband more than that one. Love is something which is fluidic, and the more one's love is, the more it increases, the more it gives out, the more it embraces, the more it draws closer together all peoples concerned. We must try to avoid, if we can, in this greater conception of things, this greater realization of things, that love, the predominant factor behind all life, is so all-embracing that it can only be truly realized and understood when it ceases to be too personal from the point of view of possessiveness and so on.
Yeah.
So I think it's so important to realize that though, for instance, you and I will be together when we are here, it will be on a much higher mental and spiritual plane, of course. And in the consequence of your coming, you will be introduced and will learn to know of many people long associated with us, and you will begin to visualize things more clearly and appreciate things more completely, that you will become, as it were, part of this great whole, because as I said before, that all spirit is one spirit, and although we are individuals inasmuch that we have individual personality and character and so on, which is an accumulation of centuries of learning and experience, nevertheless, we are all part of the other. My, for instance, progression is, in a sense, your progression. The more I progress, the more you progress, because the love and affection that I have for you and the strength that I bring to you enables you to come closer and to simulate, as you will when you come here, even more than you probably could have done if we were not together, or, for instance, if we never met. You see, sometimes people's lives are bound together over centuries of time, over many incarnations, and we become truly one spirit in the fullest sense. You see, once one can rid oneself of the individual I am, but rather consider yourself as part of the great complete whole, in other words, that you are part of the divine plan, the divine spirit, it is this oneness of mind that so many people, I think, have false values and ideas concerning themselves and religion particularly. I mean, this idea of a religious thing that people have when they accept religion, whatever it is, creed or dogma it may be, they're individuals and that they're going to be completely saved or made whole, and that they are going to be, as it were, in a form of life in which they will play a very important part, no doubt. But you see, they don't seem to appreciate that the only way to find your true identity is to lose it. In other words, it's not being saved in that sense that matters. It is that you have within yourself the capacity of saving yourself by your desiring for truth, your desiring for knowledge, by your acceptance and yet at the same time also in some senses rejection. You see, people just don't appreciate or fully understand that to appreciate white you must have black, you must have an intermediary condition of grey. In other words, all of our lives are bound up together inasmuch that we are all personal part of the other, and that where one person falls, then the person, other person involved, may have risen to a great height. They willingly, as it were, lower themselves to help the lesser one. In other words, it's only by losing self that we find ourselves, and it's only by realizing that we are what we are because of others and because of other people's thoughts and influences. In other words, we cannot arise or achieve or do anything until we, in a sense, forget ourselves in love and in service, and we accept the fact that we are all part of the great brotherhood of men, we're all part of the great plan, we're all part of the God Spirit. We're all the same spirit, but we're manifesting under different guises, if you like, in different periods of time, in different bodies, under different circumstances. But it's the same spirit that animates all life, and it's all this one spirit, or this oneness of spirit, that makes all things tangible, and all things realizable, and all things possible. And certainly it is this divine spirit that makes each of us realize our potential and our possibility. We must never lose sight of the fact that though we are individuals, we cannot rise without other people rising also, and that they're helping us and us helping them is the answer to all the problems and all the confusions. We must never consider that we have all the answers, and that we ourselves can do nothing unless we ourselves, as it were, forget ourselves in love and in true service. I've learned so much in this time that I've been here.
Yes. Well, will you continue these wonderful...
Yes. Well, religion, properly understood and properly applied, in the fullest sense, that is, and the right sense, it is the answer. But not in a narrow creedal way.
No.
Not in a way in which so many people would have one go. That often can bring despair, can often bring confusion. I think that one's mind must ever be open and free to accept or reject, if necessary, not to be tied, not to be fettered.
Yeah.
Anyway, I must go, but we'll talk on these things.
Yes, the next Egyptian one, yes. Then, shall we?
Yes, all my love and bless you.
Yes.
Bye-bye.
Thank you very, very much, darling. Yeah. It's been most interesting.
Bye-bye.
Bye.